Have you ever tried to balance justice and mercy? Hello, I'm Dave Thomas, and this is Good Word. Welcome to our discussion today. I'm happy once again to have two conversation partners, Daryl Bigger and Brent Berglund, two colleagues from the School of Theology at Walla Walla University, and we are today continuing our discussion about restoration. The Bible talks about how at one time our existence as humans was pristine, but because of the emergence of sin, we fell from our first place, and now the story of the Bible unfolds where God is working at restoring what was lost. And today we're going to be looking primarily at some places in the Old Testament, and what the lesson points out to us today is that justice and mercy are two ingredients that are in this process of restoration. And I wonder, Daryl and Brent, if we could reflect a minute on justice and mercy and how difficult or how easy it is to balance them. Do they need to be balanced? Is this a human problem? Is it a divine problem? What do you think about this whole thing of justice and mercy?
I'm struck with the creation story itself and the story of the fall of human beings initially, and God coming to them both to hold them accountable for what they had chosen, to give them what they had decided they thought they wanted, and yet to provide clothes for them, the symbol of taking care of them. That to me is one of those illustrations. The other one is the angel standing at the at the entrance to the garden, to impose the consequences of their decisions and yet have made a plan to bring them ultimately back. It's a marvel to me.
So justice and mercy, at least from a human perspective, are difficult to balance, right?
Huh.
I mean, I sometimes think of people whose children misbehave badly or who go down paths that parents wish they wouldn't. If you apply justice to do what is right, you risk creating a massive rift and alienation. And if you just are completely merciful and you don't intervene, then you create a mess of another kind. And I think about this from the perspective of what I imagine to be the perspective of God, is that if you are looking out over the universe, so to speak, or even the planet, and you see all the rights and the wrongs and the tensions, how in the world do you balance justice and mercy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it seems like what you achieve on the one side creates havoc on the other side, and so you reverse it. And
it all depends who you are. If you have been accused of a crime, and you know you're guilty, you hope for mercy. If if somebody has wronged you, you hope that other person receives justice. And so how do you keep those two in tension when all people should be treated with love and respect, and yet it all depends on which side you're on, how you see the need for justice or mercy?
You're conjuring up in my mind the cities of refuge description in the Old Testament and how those who are innocent can go there. But if they once step outside the gate of that city, vengeance can be meted out on them. So there are even boundaries to the possibility of mercy.
Now, you've got me thinking, Joseph, if I'm crying out for justice, what does that say about me, Brent?
It says you might have been wronged.
Okay.
It means that justice should be done to somebody else. we often don't want the just penalty of law. And when we consider the word justice, it's often in the context of laws that have been broken.
Yes. Yeah. In the human forgiveness class that I teach, students repeatedly come up against the realization that in our contemporary world, calls for justice is really a euphemism for vengeance. They
Many
want
times it
vengeance
is,
on the offender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually you bring an interesting thought there, Daryl, because forgiveness, one of the ingredients of forgiveness is that I give away my desire for vengeance and retribution. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, your right to see justice served in that sense.
Mm. Yeah, although I have a very elevated view of justice. I think it's a pure and right thing, whereas vengeance is vindictive. I don't think justice has an element of vindictiveness, whereas vengeance does.
It doesn't necessarily contain that, but the way in which the word is used often connotes that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a very good distinguishing separation between those two concepts, that the idea of justice holds us accountable for what we have decided we want. Mm. So our intentional acts come with consequences, and we have to endure those consequences.
So there is no, you know, with vengeance, there is a sense of rejoicing that they got what was coming to them. With a sense, yes, of justice, there might be sorrow because,
yes,
everybody may have lost in, mm-hmm, with justice. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody may be going to prison or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Frequently in the Old Testament, justice is also something that can be purchased. If you are wealthy, you can purchase justice. But if you're poor, if you're a widow, if you're an orphan, you will not get the same status in a court of law. You can't afford the lawyer, so to speak. You will lose justice. And so it was very common to see the lower, mm-hmm, classes not given the justice that they deserved and not treated well.
Yeah. You remind me of the parable that Jesus told that is sometimes called the parable of the importunate widow, the woman who had suffered injustice, and she went to the judge. But it says that the judge did not fear God or man. In other words, he was a loose cannon. And yet she went to him over and over again. And I've often thought to myself, if I were a powerless person, how would I approach a judge who is corrupt? What hope would I have of mm-hmm, you know, anything? Anyway, there are in the Old Testament a number of very challenging statements about love and justice and justice and mercy. Exodus 22, verses 21 to 27, we were looking at that a few minutes ago, and maybe you could just pick out a few little descriptors there that we could think about. What do you see in that passage?
Series of prescriptions about how this new community of reconfigured Israelites ought to live. One that catches my attention says, do not take advantage of the widow or the fatherless. The idea of justice in much of the Old Testament is defending the rights of those who appear powerless or who have lost their hold on security.
Yeah.
I was intrigued recently reading about the formation of the Jewish legal system and how people came to Moses periodically with questions. Well, what do we do about this? So they have the inheritance laws going through the oldest son of the family. Well, here comes a group of sisters with no brothers at all. So they're going to lose their family inheritance. What do we do about this? Moses goes to God, and God says, they're right. They must be they must be able to hold on to their long-term family's inheritance. So here's a way to do that. So the notion of justice preserves the rights of the weak.
Huh. Very interesting.
Justice also has in it the requirement that we put ourselves in the position of somebody else. I like what verse 21 says, you shall not mistreat a stranger nor oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I need to put myself in their position and ask, what would it feel like to be there? And if I remember back to a time when I needed mercy or deserved justice, perhaps I will treat others with as much kindness and respect as I would like.
And it is interesting that the stranger is mentioned here, and the widow, and,
yes,
the fatherless. These,
yes,
are people, and I've traveled quite a bit in my life, and you know, it's an interesting dynamic when you are the stranger. You show up somewhere and you need something and you need help, and you know that because you're a stranger, you don't know what pertains, you don't know what's true there, what's false there, and you are perfectly vulnerable. A person could mislead you, they could overcharge you, they could rob you. You have no recourse. And it's fascinating to me that that verse is very particular. You be careful how you treat the stranger and also the widow, you know. And I remember, and I don't mean any harm to insurance agents, but I remember years ago when I was a young man, I had a church I was pastoring, and I went by to visit an 84-year-old lady. She had just signed on to a whole life insurance plan. Somebody had signed her up for that. And if you know what that is, it's one that's supposed to accumulate cash value the longer you pay into it. So she was paying these fairly high premiums for something she would never realize. Mm-hmm. I was so angry, I wanted the insurance agent's name because I wanted to have some words, mm-hmm, with him, and the old widow would not let me do it because she didn't want to have trouble. I was inclined to make trouble. Was that justice, Daryl?
Yes. Well, and it is interesting to notice that not just in this passage, but often in the Old Testament, particularly as the post-exile Jewish system is being formulated, that those who were not Jews but had chosen to live with them were to be treated equally with those who, by blood and birth, were part of that community. So it was a protection for immigrants.
Now, there are two things that interest me also here. One is the Sabbath day. And there were other Sabbaths, but I think the Sabbath day was, in a sense, an emancipation from the struggles of life. And the other was this thing called the Year of Jubilee, where every 50th year, all debts were canceled. If you were enslaved, you were set free. Have you ever thought about it? I mean, do you know anything about that? What would that do to an economy? I'm pretty sure it would help people who are in debt.
Well, first you have the Sabbath day, and clearly the commandments in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5 both mention how to treat the stranger, the people within your gates, your children, your
even
slaves.
Even your animals.
Even your animals are supposed to rest. But then that is modeled on a seven-year cycle with the sabbatical year, where you could not be a slave longer than that. You could not hold a debt longer than 7 years.
Really?
Suggesting to many people today that mortgages should not be longer than 7 years.
And then what about the 50th year?
Then the 50th year, when all debts were canceled of any kind. And
property was returned to the family.
Property returned, yet you could not inherit land permanently from somebody else to whom it was given originally when Israel went into the promised land. You could only use it for a time.
So I've often wondered, though, so if I were using my land as security in year 49, it would be worth a lot less than if I was using it as security in year 50.
Exactly. You'd project that into your actuarials, wouldn't you?
So what does that do? I mean, modern culture sit on its ear.
And yet Israel was told that they were not supposed to deny the person who came to them asking for money, even if it was the 49th year or the 6th year going into a Sabbath year. They were not to turn them down. If they need something, you give it.
Yeah. I was interested also in Isaiah 1. It talks about how the failure, the perversion of justice actually affects, it influences worship. God says, I don't even want your worship if you're engaged in this kind of unhappy, pejorative way of living. I ask you and our listeners, when last did you act in behalf of some poor or disadvantaged person? You know, when last did you speak out in favor of the downtrodden? You know, I hear people talking about, you know, making people aware of something, but that's very different than actually doing something, you know, doing it. Anyway, we are running out of time here, and I'm happy to notice that this theme actually runs over into next week, that there's opportunity to pick up some of these very lively subjects again. It just strikes me that if you oppress the weak and the powerless, you make God their defender, and I'm not sure I want to go up against the Almighty myself.
No, we wouldn't.
So, not that he is mean and ugly, but he is interested. So, anyway, thank you very much, Daryl and Brent. My thanks to David Olson, our engineer. And my thanks also to those of you who listen regularly and tell us that you listen. For the Good Word, I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.